Episode 128 of Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world manage risk and seize opportunities. Learn more at futuresfundamentals.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudelli sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudelli.
Hey everyone, before we get started today, I want to thank our sponsors, CME Group and Trading Technologies. Today I spoke to a man that began his career at Bear Stearns right before the global financial crisis. Talk about a time to start in the industry. Fortunately, he continued to work for JP Morgan, and along the way he was studying trend following. After his learning experiences from working for Bear Stearns and JP Morgan, he moved on to start his own company, managing futures as a commodity trading advisor and commodity pull operator. His name is Michael Melesinos, and he is the CEO of Melesinos Trading. Today, Michael and I talked about long-term trend following and why he chooses to trade that way. We discussed some of Michael's positions and process of getting in and out of his trades. We talked about the turtle traders and why Michael thinks they got lucky. We chatted about the importance of finding a strategy that fits your personality, and he gives a great comparison between baseball pitchers throwing off a high mound and low interest rates in the markets. Michael is a bright guy who I really enjoyed speaking with, and I know you will enjoy hearing his insight on trading futures. As always, thank you all for listening, and please enjoy this episode. Michael, welcome to the show.
Anthony, thank you for having me.
It's great to speak with you today, Michael. Now, you and I have chatted a few times before, and I remember you telling me your backstory. It was very interesting when you started in the industry. So before we get into topics today, can you tell us how and where you got your start in the industry? And of course, take us through your journey a little bit, your career to eventually becoming the CEO of Melesinos Trading.
Sure. Well, I started as a lowly public accountant in 2007, quickly got sick of that, knew it wasn't for me, and I worked with a friend of mine at Bear Stearns. I started at Bear Stearns October 2007, so, you know, those of you doing the math, it's about 6 months before Bear went out of business, you know, stayed on at JP Morgan for a while, and then eventually left in 2009 to go on my trading path. You know, that Bear experience, probably unlike a lot of the young people today that are investing in the stock market or graduated within the past, you know, 8 or 9 years, only know the good times. I came into the business pretty much right around the top. So immediately I only knew the bad times. And for that, I developed a different mindset or a different skill set, one that's predicated on risk, you know, management and, you know, respecting the trend and all that stuff. Whereas today it seems like a lot of people are just kind of getting lazy, kind of think this is the way it's always going to be. Markets are always going to go up. And, you know, so, you know, I think a different, unique mindset that maybe other young people, I mean, I'm 32, so maybe other young people that are about my age, a little younger, don't have. So after that all went down, I got on the path to, you know, starting my own business and, you know, did a lot of testing to create a system that worked for me that I could follow to a T. And, you know, eventually 2011, I pulled the trigger after months of wishy-washy, you know, lack of confidence, not believing maybe I could do it. Eventually said, screw it, let's go. And here we are 6 years plus later.
Talk to us a little bit about your methodology. What are you using to trade?
Primarily, I'm through and through trend following trader to the core. And I would say I'm a trend following person as well. You know, if you're a trend follower, it's very hard to keep it to just your trading. I believe if you, you know, whatever strategy you execute in the markets is pretty much how you're going to live your life as well. And I'm trend following, you know, through and through. So initially I started trading, you know, just about like a dozen different futures markets. Today, I traded over 50, expanded my time frame. Back in the early days, I didn't have as much capital in the management, so there's only so much you can do, only so much room you can give markets to move. And, so I've made gradual evolutionary changes that I'm sure a lot of guys do. But, a very long-term focus, average holding period is about 10, 11 months. Like I said, 52 markets, and that trades everything from financials to commodities. It's pretty much the basics of it.
Gotcha. Now, we have a lot of topics to get into today, but before we get into those, I want to ask you a question about your methodology. I like to follow trend followers on Twitter. I like knowing what longer-term traders are looking at because I think that bigger-picture trends supersede short-term trends. And myself, being a futures trader, I always like to know the big-picture stuff. That's why I like to read macro stuff too. I don't really necessarily implement it into my trading because I'm a systematic trader and I do use some discretion over it, but I tend to like to know what these themes are. So just give me a quick example of a trade, a recent trade, and what was the trigger in, and talk to us about the trigger that would be to cover and what the stop would be.
Sure. The recently cattle, livestock have been, for the past few years, they were in a significant downtrend, losing 30-40%. Now, recently, they quickly reversed and, started making new highs again. So, for me, I'm looking at something that's consistent on a 1 year high and low level. If I'm on for my breakout systems, I'll look at a 1 year high and low. So, feeder and live cattle pretty correlated. I trade them both. They broke up, made new highs, got long, and I've been getting lucky so far is that they've been going parabolic, giving some weather conditions recently over the past few months, and new reports came out showing that supplies were low and all this stuff. So I've been long those. Like every trade, I have my initial stop in, which I have a few different stops. So maybe I might use a 10 ATR stop. I might use a 40, 50 day low, and then I'll have another one that's all the way down to the 1 year low. So I got stops all over the place, and they're constantly adjusting given the new price action and as the days click by here. I kind of tier into trades, and I kind of tier out as well. And I don't have one system that's all in, all out for every market that I trade.
Okay. And what's always interesting to me on the trend following side is where are you guys covering? So you're long a market, it's rallying. Are you selling at higher highs? At what point do you say, I'm going to take them off? Because I'm a level-to-level trader. So when I get in at a level, I have a target. I already know where I'm getting in. I know where I'm getting out. My stops aren't variables. They don't change. And I'm not really, typically even adjusting them either. So I have my outs and I let them go till they get there. In a trend following situation, I'm wondering, how does it getting you out?
Trend followers, the old school style, right, is waiting for the trend to reverse. If you're long, you're waiting for it to go against you before you get out. Now, this new school style of this vol targeting, or whatever they want to call it these days, whatever fancy language they want to call it these days, it's basically just cutting your winner short. If cattle in this case is working for me, I'm going to stick with it as long as it doesn't hit my sell stop that's below the market. Below the price currently. Over time, as that trend matures and increases, those stops move up. They don't move up every day. They may move up according to the pattern. If it's a 40-day low, it's pretty much a delayed market pattern 40 days later. So that, I'm only taking things when things stop working. I don't say, all right, this is this looks a little extended to the upside here. I don't want to give all this back. I'm afraid I'm going to, because the last 10 trades that happened to me. So I'm just going to cut this one and take my profits and run. I never do that. Now, during bad times, like we've had in the past couple of years, trend followers may have wanted to do that because the trends haven't run as much. They run for a little bit and then boom, they come back down. So the guys that have been cutting their winners look very smart. The counter trend guys look, say, hey, your trend following stuff doesn't work anymore. All that type of speak, and they say, "Oh, this counter trend stuff works. You gotta cut these things now because markets are different." No, that's all just nonsense. Every strategy goes through its good and bad. So I'll take that bad part of trend following, which is never cutting my winners, in exchange for me having unlimited upside. Who knows how far these trends can run, how far they can go. So I don't like to have a leash on them. I'd much rather just wait for them to stop working instead of me saying, I think they're going to stop, so I'm going to stop for it. I don't want to do that.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've spoken with at LMT978 on Twitter. You may know who he is. His name's Larry
Tentarelli, right?
Yeah, he's a great guy. And, you know, he really is one of the people who got me more and more interested in following trend followers, because I really respect him and what he's doing. And of course, there's Colvell as well, who I've checked out as well. But Larry's my favorite, and I just, you know, I love his transparency, and he talks about how he's getting in and getting out. And that's why I always like to talk to other trend followers. You know, I've also spoken with, you know, Jerry Parker on this show as well. And just very interesting to hear the different, you know, ways that you guys are following this specific type of methodology. And speaking of Jerry Parker, you and I had a conversation I thought was pretty funny. And I was like, yeah, what do you want to talk to today a little bit, Michael? And you were like, hey, I wanted to mention how the turtle traders, they got lucky. So I thought that was kind of funny and interesting. And I don't know what you're going to say. So why did you think the turtle traders got lucky?
Okay, well, I have utmost respect for the turtle guys, Dennis. I'm friends with Jerry Parker. You know, we talk a lot, and I told him too. And, you know, I don't know, you know, if guys within the program would maybe acknowledge this now after doing a lot of research since. As I remember, it's like been 30, 40 years since that experiment took place. But if you test longer term systems, like I said, like maybe buying like 200 day highs, selling 200 day lows, buying when the 100 EMA crosses above the 300. You know, this is a time frame that the turtles were not executing back then. They were buying, you know, 20-day highs, 60-day highs. These are very, very short-term duration, you know, patterns, you know, breakouts. So back then, we had great markets, you know, for a whole host of trend-following systems, whether short-term, medium-term, long-term. They all worked, right? Because markets were smooth. Oh, and you had the ability, and you had the added bonus of having interest rates that were, you know, very, very high. Today we don't have that. So they had a lot of things working for them. But today, or say, you know, since that time, markets have gotten out of that very smooth trending type of environment and went back to a more, you know, choppy environment, which, you know, markets do this. It's not a phenomenon of the past 30, 40 years. It's always been this way, you know, and in markets that are, you know, been going back thousands of years, things go smooth and then they go choppy. So what's funny though, is that even the long-term stuff today worked better than that short-term turtle stuff back then. It was just, you know, short-term stuff tends to, when it works, people really love it because they get to win. And then they get to do something all day. You know, they get to trade. They get to have fun. Or, you know, if that's what they're in it for. The longer term stuff, it's like, dude, I'm in this trade for 10 months and I'm watching this thing swing back and forth, you know, 10, 20% swings, and I'm not getting out. Like, what the heck is this? I don't want to do this. I want to be more active. So I feel like the turtle story captured the attention of people because it was short term in nature and it worked. But those systems today, like, yeah, they may produce profit in theory, but they come with significant drawdowns. And, you know, how I like to measure efficiency of any system is through by using like the MAR ratio or the Sortino to give it a, you know, give us an idea of comparing one trend following system versus another. The longer term stuff just beats the hell out of the short term stuff. It's just that back then, during that 4, 5 year, 10 year period, whatever it was, the short term stuff worked well enough, and it was good enough for a lot of people. So they just took it and ran with it, and tried to emulate it and copy it and stick with it over time. But it doesn't, you know, the short term stuff generally doesn't hold up as well over long periods of time, like decades, than the long term stuff does.
Yeah, well, speaking about longer term trading versus short term trading, And you believe that longer-term trends, if you just mentioned, have always worked better than short-term trends. And I probably would argue to say that anyone who's traded, really hard to disagree with that. I mean, myself, I've been a short-term trader my whole career. It's funny that I think that the longer-term trade trends work better than the shorter-term, but I've only been a shorter-term trend trader, and it's really because I'm just the way I'm built. You know, I'm somebody who I couldn't go through those swings. I'm someone who likes to get in and get out within a day. You know, I mean, even multiple days for me is like a long period, a long holding. I mean, I do it, but it doesn't happen too often. And like I said, I'm someone who likes to size up a little bit and trade with a little bit of a tighter stop and be able to, you know, look for my, you know, hopefully my price is hit within a day or maybe multiple days at the longest period of time. But in your experience, you know, everybody's experiences is different. Like you said, when you started in 07 versus when somebody who started maybe in 2012 and from when I started on the floor in 1995. I mean, you just learn differently. Why do you believe that the longer term trading is better than the short term?
Well, it's better for me because I can stick to it. And I feel like, on a deep level, there's a lot of strategies that work, you know, that produce a profit historically in theory, right? If you can stick to it. So what works best for me is the long-term stuff because I'm not a hyperactive type of person. And I'm not saying, I don't mean hyperactive in a pejorative way. I'm just saying I don't like to do a whole lot day-to-day, intraday. I don't want to be looking at markets all day. That's just not me. So I like the longer-term stuff because it just fits more with my personality. But if you do some just simple objective tests, you know, do a test, take a portfolio of 20 random futures markets, spread them out between different sectors, go buy 60-day highs versus buying and selling 200-day highs. You know, just change the parameter, change one parameter, and run that test since the 1960s or however much data you can get and see what works better. You know, and I mean by working better, meaning by what has a higher absolute return, what has a higher risk-adjusted return, which for me, I mentioned before, I like to use the Sortino and the MAR ratio. And the MAR is compounded return divided by the max drawdown. Those longer-term systems generally have higher Sortino and MAR ratios. And granted, it all matters if you follow it. If you don't follow it, then you got nothing. But if you, you know, in those tests, you will see that. And I've done thousands of tests. And a lot of other guys, a lot smarter than me, have done that too. So people want to probably, you know, people who like to trade and just like want to be in it and want to have, you know, want to have something to do and whatever, they may try to test, you know, try to get as short term as they can without breaking the viability of the strategy itself.
Well, you made a great point. And the point that you made was that it has to fit your personality. You know, for me, I'm not someone who has the temperament to sit back and wait for trades like that. That's just not the way I'm built. I know what I accepted. I'm not going to sit here and be sitting in a trade for 10 months. It's not going to happen. You know, that's just not who I am. And I know that at some point, I would struggle trading that type of strategy because I would probably break the strategy rules just to get out or to even get in. So
yeah, it would make you sick. And yeah. I'm telling you, like, when I, you know, look at the dollar. I got, you know, long the dollar in mid-2014, you know, at like $81, you know, on the index. And guess what? I'm still long it, you know. And that was including two retracements from 100 down to 93 and then like, and then 100 again down to 92. And now you have, you know, most recently, early in the year, we made highs. I believe it was around like 104, and now we're down to 97.5. And these take months or weeks to play out. And to sit there and watch your profits evaporate and just grind away would probably make a lot of people sick. Like, ah, no, I got to get out of this. I can't sit through this thing. You know, so it's much like how people can't beat the S&P, you know, because it's the S&P has the ability, which most people don't, which is perfect discipline. Most people don't have perfect discipline, no matter how good their system is, you know?
No,
so a decent system is probably better than trying to find some perfect thing that you're going to second guess and try to improve all the time, you know? So that's why it's, you know, arguing over what's better, what's not. Like, I don't know. This works better for me. Long-term works better for me.
Well, I want to talk about the dollar trade a little bit more because it, to me, I find it to be very interesting to be in a trade that long. What's the end game there? I mean, you know, you, obviously you don't have to reveal your stop or anything like that for a trade that you've been sitting in. But my point is that you've seen it get above 100 multiple times. And I'm just using that big round number as to say, okay, yeah, it got above there. You know, it's a nice profit. Like, how are you ever exiting that trade on, I don't want to say a high, but like at a higher level than where we are now, as opposed to it's a down ticking. So it's basically, is it always like a trailing stop that's getting you out of this? I mean, I guess I'm trying to figure out like, what's the end game here?
Right. So when I initially got in it, it was, you know, the sell stop, you know, I'll say like the longest term sell stop for me, you know, let's call it the, you know, 200-day low in this case, right, was about 81.3. Okay. That was back. That was the 200-day low back in 2014. Right. I'm using like a continuous chart pattern here. Now it's 94. That maybe right there tells you that yes, the thing does trail and the thing, it does increase. It, you know, it lags the market. It adjusts as the market moves higher and it has staying power. The longer it stays higher, this thing will continue to tick up. So it'll tick up for two reasons. If the market continues higher or if it stays higher without, you know, eventually falling down and hitting the stop itself. So right now, maybe in the coming couple of weeks, maybe the stop will move a little bit higher to 94. I don't know. I don't have the rough math offhand, but yeah. So at that 94 in this system, it would, you know, get short at 94, and then boom. All right, now we're short the dollar. Now we're biased short for the first time in 3 years, pretty much.
Gotcha. It's interesting to me. So. You had a great comparison that we touched base a little bit on, and I want to hear you finish the story. It was about how baseball pitchers being on a high mound and that comparison to low interest rates and how they affect markets was similar to batting averages. And I probably botched that there, but, you know, talk to us about that analogy.
Yeah, they had an experiment done in the 70s or the 60s. I'm not sure offhand, but back then, they had very, very poor batting average numbers, home run numbers, RBI, runs scored, all offensive numbers were very, very low. Before they adjusted the mound lower, when a mound's higher, it generally makes it tougher for the hitter to hit because the ball is coming from a higher point to a lower point. It's easier to hit a ball when the ball stays on a flat plane. Okay, so the eye adjustment up to down made it harder for the hitters to hit, and they couldn't hit it. And, you know, for the businessmen involved, they say, look, we need offense. That's what puts people in the seats. We need people to watch this game, come to the game, so we can continue to have a sport here. So they did that, and then offensive numbers went through the roof pretty much like the next year. You know, the next 2 years were amazing, and they've been, you know, steadily climbing higher over the coming decades, and they never adjusted the mound back higher again. I'm not sure how much they adjusted it down, but they adjusted it down a significant enough to really improve the offensive numbers. So, you know, that was a pretty significant policy change in the sport, you know. And I feel like today, I don't know, I'm not smart enough, but it feels like this policy change of no interest rates or you know, maybe now that we're raising, but, you know, 10 years of low to negative interest rates, you know, pretty much worldwide. This isn't like, you know, in baseball analogy, it wasn't like one stadium, you know, one country had low rates. This is all the stadiums for the entire sport had to abide by this rule. So I feel like today it's a similar thing because everyone's abiding by the low to no negative interest rate rule. And I'm not smart enough to know how this really affects markets, but it seems to have affected it in a significant way where you have correlation going through the roof. When you have copper, you know, correlating with the yen, correlating with stocks, correlating with oil, you know, like, you know, what the hell's going on? You know, these things have, you know, fundamentally nothing to do with each other. But if everyone's copying each other, going the same rules, and markets are all abiding by the same theme, you know, this policy change, then we have an issue, because diversification doesn't work as well, and markets, it's seemingly, over the past 10 years, haven't trended as well. Yeah, sure, there have been pockets, you know, 2008, 2010, and 14 come to mind, but outside of that, for trend followers, it hasn't worked that well. So something's up, and I believe that possibly this change, this affliction to the low interest rate stuff worldwide has caused it, you know, has played a major role in it. But again, I'm not smart enough to be able to really prove it. But that's what I'm just observing here.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously had a major effect on the markets. I mean, there's no question about it.
You could test 1,000 years worth of data, and you don't have a period like this in the data. You don't have a period of worldwide zero to negative interest rates in the data. So it's not like, oh, I backtested this scenario before, we'll be fine. It's like, no, it doesn't exist. So, you know, something's different for sure. It doesn't mean that people are different or that markets are perpetually from this point forth forever different. It just means that, hey, you know, this is like something to prepare for, something to in your design of a trading strategy and investing, you know, philosophy, be try to prepare for things like this that can happen, you know. And like, yeah, trend following hasn't been that great since this new policy has been spreading. So it doesn't mean that it won't get better. It means that, for whatever reason, it seems to have coincided with a poor trend following performance. Maybe a coincidence, maybe not. I don't know. I'm not smart enough, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I could do a million shows on interest rates, and I've done several shows on them and the impact they've had and different opinions. And someone like myself who trades a lot of treasuries and bonds, just the lack of volatility and just a one-way rally, and finally we're starting to see some rotation over the past, you know, 6 to 12 months, is like a breath of fresh air that the Fed is finally, you know, doing that. But then, you know, you come back and we don't know how long it's going to last. But like I said, we could do a lot of shows on that, but great stuff today, Michael. I really had a lot of fun speaking to you on those topics, but we're not done yet. I have some rapid-fire questions for you, so if you're ready for those, I'll fire away.
Rock and roll.
All right, everyone. Our rapid-fire segment is sponsored by Trading Technologies. Trade the global markets from virtually anywhere with TT. They are the world's fastest commercially available trading platform. Create your account and try it now, free at tryttnow.com. First question for Michael today: how has your trading evolved over the years?
I've evolved the portfolio from a portfolio of 11 markets to now over 50. Day one, you know, trading system where my average holding period is about 3 or 4 months. Now I said it's like 10, 11 months. Now I had one system back then. Now I have three, working on a fourth. That's, you know, all trend following in nature, but more moving parts. More diversification, longer time frame, pretty much the major changes.
Now, can you tell me the moment that trading just clicked for you?
I don't know if you mean click by the way of, oh, I get it now, because I don't think you ever get it. I think it clicked in phases where I understood what I was doing day one. I knew my system, knew my strategy, what worked well for me. But things start to click as you start to make and lose money. I guess what's clicked recently, experiencing a drawdown myself, over the past couple of years, is how important it is for everyone to be trading a system that really works for them.
What's the number one source you spend your time on?
Pretty much, you know, looking at charts, looking at research, testing every idea I have, throwing most of them out because they're terrible, and really kind of like observing myself, my feelings as I make and lose money. I feel like that it really helps to know yourself first, and then I feel like it gives you a big edge in the markets. So,
what's your favorite book about trading or the markets?
Michael Covell's Trend Following book, and his new fifth edition just came out. So anyone who's looking for a book, that's a beast. Now it's much bigger than the first edition. So, but definitely that one still for me.
What's your favorite movie or TV show about trading or the markets?
I liked the profit for a while. It wasn't really about the markets, but it was about like business. And I feel like the show had a lot of the guys, the host, Marcus Lemonis. He is basically a trend following guy, but he doesn't trade the markets. He runs businesses. So I love that show. I don't watch it anymore because I feel like it's gone downhill. But that was my favorite one for a while.
What's the best piece of advice you've received about trading or the markets?
Same old stuff I've said many times. Find a system that works and find a system that works for you. A decent system followed to the T works much better than a perfect system that's followed intermittently.
Now, if you can give a piece of advice to the new people interested in getting involved in trading, what would it be?
Study yourself first. Study what it is you want out of trading. If you just want to trade, be active and do something all day and, read charts and stuff, okay. If you want to be a long-term trend-following guy like me and not do much and kind of adjust your system on a daily, weekly basis, okay, that's fine too. I'd really get down to what it is you want and then try to make that happen. I feel like if you're just running around trying to copy the most recent winner, the most recent group of winners, some strategy or this or that, you're always going to be chasing and you're not ever going to be, ahead of the curve because market strategies and philosophies go in cycles. They work well for a while. They don't work for other times. And if you're going to stick with one, you got to accept the fact that you're going to take the good with the bad.
Final question for today, Michael. If you weren't a trader, you'd be doing what?
Probably coaching baseball, maybe being a psychologist or maybe a physical therapist. I'm very much into health, baseball, and the mental game. So probably one of those.
Oh, well, I could tell you, I really enjoyed this today, Michael. I had a lot of fun. It was fantastic speaking with you. Great insight. So before I let you go, is there anything else you'd like to add to today's show?
I think I've talked a lot. Yeah, if anyone wants to hit me up on social media, I'm on Twitter and active there with trying to get into conversations. My handle is M Melissinos. M for Mike, and then my last name, Melissinos.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely got to check out Mike on Twitter. You're a good guy for coming on Futures Radio Show today, Michael. I appreciate it, and I look forward to having more conversations with you in the future.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to next time.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.